Welcome to the Aligned Musician Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kimberly Hankins, and I'm a violist as well as a yoga and breathwork facilitator. I created this podcast to empower musicians like you to find your own path towards healing and normalize conversations around musicians' wellness. I'm so grateful for your support and thank you for joining me. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode. I'm really excited for this one. It's unlike any episode I've done before, and I hope you enjoy it. So before I get into the podcast, though, I have a special announcement. I'm doing a podcast giveaway. So if you want to enter the giveaway, all you need to do is give an honest review of this podcast on any podcast platform. Take a screenshot of your review and email it to thealignedmusician@gmail.com. I'll also include that email in the show notes for this episode. And once I receive that, I will send you a code for three breathwork sessions, three group breathwork sessions of your choice, totally free. So if you've been curious about breathwork or have been wanting to dedicate some more time to your practice in that, please join us. And there's a variety of different breathwork sessions that I offer as well, depending on what you're looking for. So this episode is actually mostly a recording. And this recording is something I did about 2 weeks ago on Instagram Live on a whim. I just felt so called to speak on trauma-informed or trauma-sensitive language and music education. Because I've learned so much about trauma-informed language in my time as a yoga teacher and as a breathwork facilitator, but I almost never hear these conversations happening in the music world. And I feel like that really needs to change. And so if you have any thoughts about this topic or any of the topics discussed in this episode, I would love to hear from you. Please DM me on Instagram at The Aligned Musician, and I would love to hear from you. So in this episode, there are some topics discussed around trauma, anxiety, depression, my own experience with beta blockers, with dealing with performance anxiety, and then how that shifted into a panic disorder. And also just the topic of trauma itself can be heavy. It can be challenging to sit with and learn about. And so, as always, but especially with this episode, if you feel like taking breaks or if you feel like leaving this episode, skipping to the next one, or if you just need to process it in smaller amounts, you are absolutely welcome to, and I encourage you to do that. This work is not easy. It's challenging, and it can be challenging just to learn about and sit with. So know that there's no shame in that, and I hope that you do listen to your body and take breaks as needed. Going along with that, if you're experiencing anything in the show that's mentioned or any mental illness at all, there is no shame in seeking out help. And there are so many resources out there. There's no shame in seeking out a therapist or a psychologist or any mental health professional because, you know what, mental illness is hard and it's challenging and it's a struggle and you don't have to go through it alone. So just know that that is an option as well. I do list some, I do go through some tools and tips and tricks for dealing with anxiety and some sensations that can be brought about by trauma or as a result of trauma or as a result of chronic stress levels. But these tips are just tools for you to try, and if they don't work, leave them. You know, all of us work differently. All of us have different bodies, different minds. And so if these practices don't work for you, that's okay too. So, why don't we go ahead and get started into that? So, find a comfortable seated position. You can be standing, you can be lying down. And if you're currently driving or doing something else right now, you can just listen and maybe do this practice at a later point in time. So, find your comfortable position, and you are always welcome to keep your eyes open, or if it feels better for you, you can find a soft gaze or close your eyes. Just take a few breaths here without changing anything. If your eyes are closed, I invite you to open them for a moment and just look around your space, noticing the colors, the textures, maybe finding something that brings you joy to look at. It might be a picture, or maybe just gazing out your window into nature. Noticing the sounds, the smells, the sounds in your space, and maybe the sounds outside. Starting to bring your awareness back into the body. If you like, you're welcome to close your eyes again or soften your gaze. And start to feel every place that's in contact with something that's touching the floor beneath you. Place that's touching the ground beneath you. I invite you to imagine that there are roots extending out deep into the earth, allowing you to feel grounded, rooted. And you can start to draw your awareness back into your breath. Now, if this is something that feels uncomfortable, you can return your awareness back into your space. If your awareness is on your breath, we're just going to take three breaths together. Noticing the inhales and exhales at your own pace. Maybe noticing the temperature of the air as it moves in and out through your nose. Maybe noticing the expansion and the release that happens in your body. And you can stay here for as long as you need, but if you're ready to move out of this, just start to rub your palms together, creating a little bit of heat. And you can bring your hands over your closed eyes, or maybe just bring the hands to heart. Take a moment to blink your eyes open if they're closed. Gaze around your space, maybe look at that object that brings you joy. And now I will start to play that recording. Thank you all so much for joining me for this episode, and see you next time.
I feel really called to talk about trauma-informed language and nervous system regulation. For those who don't know, my name is Dr. Kimberly Hankins. I'm a violist, I'm a yoga and breathwork facilitator, and I've also done a number of trauma-informed trainings and my own research on nervous system regulation. I am not a therapist, I am not a psychologist, psychiatrist, anything of that nature. But I have done quite a bit of research on what it means to be trauma-informed or trauma-sensitive in various different spaces. It's interesting because the more I learn about how the nervous system works, the more I feel that every music educator or every person that works one-on-one with another human should have some knowledge about the nervous system and how to avoid inadvertently triggering or re-traumatizing people. Because I believe that anytime that we're interacting with someone one-on-one or even in a group setting, there's a potential for our nervous systems to be well regulated or not so well regulated. So, what do I mean by nervous system regulation? According to polyvagal theory, and this is something that there are many books written about, you can do your own research on, but according to polyvagal theory, we have three kind of states of arousal within the nervous system, speaking generally. We have a place where our sympathetic nervous system is really activated, and that's a place where we might feel anxious, we might feel very stressed. We might, if in the upper reaches of sympathetic nervous system activation, we might be triggered, we might be angry, we might be feeling very, very intense emotions, and there becomes a point where if you are so activated in your nervous system, your thinking brain actually stops working properly. And so you might react without knowing it what it is that you're doing or remember what you did because you're so unregulated in the nervous system. On the opposite end of the spectrum, and maybe I should have introduced it more as a spectrum, but on the opposite side of the spectrum, we have parasympathetic nervous system response where we're feeling a sense of rest and digest, where we have a sense of calm, we might feel very peaceful. Lower on that spectrum, as we get more into parasympathetic nervous system response, we might feel tired, lethargic, we might dissociate, we might freeze. We might be so much in the parasympathetic nervous system response that it starts behaving almost like the sympathetic nervous system response. And actually, many people draw this when they map this out rather than making it like a thermometer, where up here you have high sympathetic nervous system activation, and down here you have low parasympathetic nervous system activation. Many people draw it in a circle. Because fight, flight, freeze, we often loop together. But freeze is actually a parasympathetic nervous system thing. So when we're thinking about that, it's like, okay, that makes sense. Like in my own lived experience as a human, I can think back on times where I may have acted out of fear or out of anger or felt very anxious. And then there are times where I felt very calm, where I may have dissociated, where I may have just been so lethargic and tired. Because I am in the kind of wellness space where I see a lot of people saying, oh, we just need to activate the parasympathetic nervous system, right? All the time. We just need to get to this place of calm. But I actually disagree with that. I think many other people disagree with it too, because the nervous system is never designed to just stay in one place. We're not supposed to be tired all the time. We're not supposed to be awake all the time. Our nervous systems are designed in this way where, when they're working in a healthy way, when faced with some kind of stress or danger, we can move into that sympathetic nervous system response, which gets our body primed to deal with that, whatever that stress is. And then, after that stress is over, we can then come back down to a place of calm. Another way of thinking of it is that, we go through periods of time where we might be feeling lethargic and tired. And then we might have to go to work or go to our job or in the before times, go to our orchestra job. And when we're sitting in orchestra, yeah, we need to be a little bit more in that sympathetic nervous system response in order to pick up on those little details, in order to react to our environment, in order to show up as the best version of ourselves and be alert. So then afterwards, we can come back to our sense of calm or be able to react to things in any kind of way. And this is why yoga is such a powerful practice. And I don't really want to get into why too much, because I really want to make this about the importance of trauma-informed language in music education spaces. But I will say that one of the reasons why it's coming to find out through all of this like scientific research, one of the reasons why yoga is so helpful for promoting the sense of calm or the sense of ease is because there are practices within yoga that bring you into a higher activation state of the nervous system, and there are practices that bring you into a lower state of the nervous system. And through this safe container of a yoga class, moving through all of these states of nervous system arousal, we come out the other end learning that it's safe to experience the full spectrum of nervous system activation. And when I say we learn it's safe, I don't mean like cognitively like, oh yeah, it's safe. It's safe to do that. I mean, maybe, but it teaches us on a somatic body level, nervous system level, that we may not even be conscious of. And so that's powerful, because for many people that have experienced trauma, and by trauma, I mean anything, any stress, any event, anything at all that affected the nervous system long term is what trauma really is. But for those of us who have experienced maybe more extreme traumas, or maybe prolonged periods of time of high levels of stress, what can happen is that the nervous system gets stuck in one place. And we see this all of the time. I know for myself, as somebody who has struggled with anxiety, who has struggled with panic attacks, who has struggled with major depressive disorder, I can say that there are periods of time where I definitely was stuck in a very specific place of nervous system arousal. And it took a lot of time to kind of get my body to feel okay moving through more of those states. This matters because when we're working one-on-one with someone, we don't know. I mean, there are often clues, but we don't know what state of nervous system response another person is in. And so it's important that we use language to give someone more sovereignty over themselves and the choices that they make. And the reason for that is because when we have options, it requires us to question how we're feeling and then respond in a way that works best for us. And that doesn't always work because, right, there in nervous system response, there's also something called fawning or fawn response, where you may respond in a way that you feel is going to keep you safe. And so when you're responding, when someone asks you a question, you're responding, if you're responding from a place of fawning, you may not answer the question in the way that actually is best for you. And so that's a whole other thing. But at least in working with other people, you want to create a sense of empowerment, right? You want people to feel empowered to learn whatever it is you're trying to teach them and then to go on and implement that in a way that works best for them. And so this is why using trauma-informed language to avoid getting someone into a higher state of nervous system arousal, or to avoid getting them into a lower state of nervous system arousal where they just dissociate, it's why using trauma-informed language is so helpful and can be so helpful. And I also want to say too that, like, even if we are using the most trauma-informed, trauma-sensitive language in our interactions, there's always a potential for people to still be triggered or still be moved into another state of nervous system arousal. Why? Because no matter what we say, we can only control what we say. We can never control how it's received. And even me talking right now, I might wonder, like, wow, I hope y'all understand what I'm talking about. But I can't control how you're receiving this information. So what do we do as music educators? How do we present ourselves and offer languaging in a way that avoids the re-traumatizing of our students? And I think that's a big question. And if anybody has things that have helped them be more trauma sensitive in their interactions with their students or with their teachers, like, please let me know. Please put that in the comments, because I think that this is a conversation that hasn't really been talked a lot about in the music world and should be. So a little bit earlier, I said that one of the ways that we use trauma-informed language is by offering words that increase choice or increase self-sovereignty or agency in the other person we're speaking with. And so really simple things as a music teacher. I think actually a lot of people already know this one, to ask permission before you touch your student or before you touch their instrument. You know, that's a really simple one of, like, is it okay? And it only takes a minute or a second. Is it okay if I touch your hand? I want to show you this specific technique. And if they say no, honor that. You know, don't make a big deal out of it. Don't say, oh, I wish I could just show you. You know, I think many times as teachers, we get used to teaching things in a specific way. And when the dynamic and the relationship between teacher and student doesn't allow us to just, like, show it the way that we know has worked for how many other students, that can be frustrating. But I think it's important not to show frustration when a student is setting a boundary that's a healthy boundary for themselves. So going into some languaging things, how do we increase autonomy or agency or sovereignty in students? Instead of saying, start here, or start playing, or anything that's a direct action, rephrasing that into, would you like to start here? Or what if we started with this today? Is that okay with you? It may seem like such a simple thing and not so important, but it actually can make a huge difference for people to feel like they're being supported or like they have choice, which they should have choice, right? Because the goal of educating is not to make somebody do things. It's for them to feel like they're in a safe environment so that they can learn. And as I was kind of alluding to earlier, when we're in that higher state of nervous system response, our thinking brain turns off. It's much harder for us to process and learn information than when we're in a more parasympathetic or more well-regulated state of nervous system arousal. And I apologize if this is a lot of information. let me know if you have any questions about this in the comments, and I can make more videos and kind of break stuff down and offer what my understanding is on this. So always offering things as a suggestion or as a question. With my students, something I often do a lot of, because I'm very concerned about setting students up in a way where they feel comfortable while they're playing. And so I often ask my students how they feel, because I'm trying to get them, whenever they're playing, I want my students to have a moment of reflection somatically, asking themselves how they feel in their body. Because with this whole nervous system thing, tension is actually a big part of this too. And that if you're in a place of higher sympathetic nervous system arousal, you have a greater likelihood of experiencing tension in the body. So it's actually really important to make sure that we're not adding to the stress of our students, so that not only so that they can learn and process that information easier, but also so that we're not promoting tension within the body. So I'm always asking my students how they feel. And one of the first things I often ask them after they play a passage is, how did that feel? And 9 times out of 10, they're going to respond in a way where I'm learning more about them and what they noticed about their playing than I could ever learn if I was just telling them immediately, oh, that sounded bad, or like, did you notice you were out of tune? You know, I think that those phrases can be helpful in certain circumstances, but most of the time, I think students, if they know, they'll tell you. I think another big thing is that no matter what we do, if you're a teacher or if you're a student, that there's always going to be a perceived energetic power imbalance, right? Because the teacher is in charge, the student is like feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm just the student. Like, I don't have self-agency right now when I'm in the studio. And so as a teacher, doing things to promote the sense that I'm not in charge of you, I'm actually here to guide you, and we're in this together, that this is a group project. That the goal isn't for you to do everything like me. The goal is for me to share knowledge and try to help you and support you along the way. And eventually you continue on feeling empowered to take whatever information in whatever way. So little things that I've noticed, that I've picked up on over the years of being a music student, that have heightened my sympathetic nervous system response, for sure. Little things like, if I'm in a space, if I'm in a studio where the stand is set up away from the door and the teacher is in front of the door, that always made me feel very anxious, because I felt like I wasn't free to leave. And even if it's like somebody I know is a safe person, somebody I trust, I still feel a little bit like, why are you putting yourself between me and the door? Like, that's kind of a weird placement. And I don't think that people consciously do this. Maybe some people do. But yeah, something as simple as like how the studio is set up. Is the studio set up in a way where the student feels safe to enter or to leave, or to have an option to leave if they feel like leaving? If that's going to be the best thing for their mental health, is to just walk out? Like, that should be a choice for the student. What else? Oh my gosh, there's so many little things. And I think that for different people, it can be different things. And so I'm really curious, like, if you're a musician watching this and you're a student, or you were a student at one point, like, is there anything that, without naming names, is there anything that your teacher did that you thought was completely innocent, but on some subconscious level made you not feel as safe or as supported in that space? I'd love to hear from you and know what those things are. Just so that we can do better as teachers. And I think with everything being on Zoom, a lot of this has had to change, right? Because I know many old school teachers who are like, I don't know how to teach without physically touching my students. I think that that can definitely be a challenge if that's the only way that you've taught. I also think it can be challenged with when working with certain populations, like when working with younger people. How do you show them what something is supposed to feel like without touching them? And I think that it's always possible. I think there's always a million ways to teach the same thing and have it be effective. And if the student feels safe, they're going to learn it faster than if they feel unsafe. And again, when I would use the word safe and unsafe, I'm not talking about a conscious level. I'm talking about on a body, somatic, nervous system level. Because we don't get to decide what feels safe and what doesn't feel safe. What gets stored in the body as trauma is not our choice. There's this really great phrase that I heard, and I wish I remembered who said it. But they said that what is stored in the body as trauma is not the severity of the incident that happened. It's the amount of surprise that the nervous system experienced. And I kind of talked about this a little bit on my other account, because I'm doing 100 days of practice challenge in my own redesigned way. In my own redesigned way, because I felt like the way that the 100 days of practice challenge was set up, it had the potential for those who have experienced high stress levels or trauma in the past to feel things like guilt or shame when they weren't able to do something every single day. That there's a sense of perfectionism that comes up and anxiety that has the potential to come up. So I created my own version because I believe in the power of discipline. I think discipline is something powerful and important. And I also think that setting up how we decide to be disciplined can make all the difference. So, in this instance, I gave myself the parameters of I'm going to practice every day for at least 15 minutes, and the days I don't feel like practicing, I'm going to do score study, or I'm going to visualize myself practicing so that I'm always studying music on a daily basis. And even when I don't feel like showing up, or maybe my body doesn't let me show up, I don't have to feel guilty about it because I'm honoring my body. There's something about long-term sympathetic nervous system response, and even parasympathetic nervous system response, that makes us feel like what we're feeling isn't valid. So I just wanted to honor that in there. And I wanted to say a couple of the things that kind of came up in the comments of one of my posts about this. is that, oh, I think I already covered this, but that trauma is anything that disrupts the nervous system long term. And so what I mean by that is that trauma has a way of holding us in one place of sympathetic nervous system response. And when we heal trauma, we're learning on a somatic level that being in these other states of nervous system arousal are safe. And that after we experience a period of stress, that it's safe to come back down. And that if we're feeling dissociative or anything like that, it's safe to come back up. And I see a lot of educators and people learning about this and like wanting to help people. And so something I have seen and heard a lot is, oh, if you're feeling stressful, like just take a breath. Or in a music setting, oh, you're experiencing like performance anxiety, it's okay, just take a deep breath and then start playing, right? I don't know how many of y'all have heard that. But as someone who's trauma informed and as someone who's a breathwork facilitator, something that's not often considered is that if you're breathing in through your mouth, you're actually moving to a higher state of sympathetic nervous system response. If you take an inhale that's longer than your exhale, you're moving into a more sympathetic nervous system response. You're moving into a higher state of activation. And so, first of all, it actually matters how you are taking that deep breath. And if you are already feeling anxious and you take a deep breath, even if it's a breath that's supposed to get you to a lower state of nervous system arousal, you still might be triggered. And so telling people, oh, just take a deep breath, is not always helpful. And I think it's important to know that. When it comes to things like performance anxiety is so multifaceted. I don't know. I could go on a whole tangent about performance anxiety, but I'm always really hesitant to talk about it because it's so multifaceted. And I remember when I was dealing with performance anxiety, I started feeling really anxious when I was performing, and so I started using beta blockers. And I took beta blockers for about a year or 2 years, something like that. And a couple things happened. When I use beta blockers, I found that in performance settings, I didn't care so much about the outcome of my performances, which really worried me because I should care. I should care about what I sound like. And when I took beta blockers, I no longer cared. And I can only speak about my own experience on this. And I also want to preface this by saying that using beta blockers was also very needed at that time in my life because I didn't feel safe performing or sharing my voice. So, and I was so anxious that I wasn't able to get through performances. And so I needed to teach my body how to feel safe when performing. And so the start of that journey for me was taking beta blockers. And it helped, but at the same time, I found myself feeling kind of dissociative. And when I decided I wanted to stop taking beta blockers, I decided to take less every performance and to kind of journal my experience before and after. And basically through that process of self-study and really asking myself what I needed to feel safe in performances, that was what helped me move through that. experience. I also did some breathwork techniques. I did Nadi Shodhana, which if you're not familiar with alternate nostril breathing, I find that that can be really helpful. That's where you breathe in through a nostril and out, and then you switch to the other side. And that's a pretty well-regulated breath practice to do, because you're not taking a big breath. When you breathe through one nostril, it's a lot slower. And it's said in yoga that the right nostril activates the sympathetic nervous system, and breathing through the left nostril activates the parasympathetic nervous system. So by breathing through one and then the other, you're bringing your nervous system more into a state of calm, focused awareness, alertness. So I find that that's a really helpful breathing practice for that. But what happened was I stopped taking beta blockers and I started having panic attacks every single time I was about to walk into a room full of people. Like, didn't matter if it was a performance or if it was a classroom. And I remember this all kind of came to a head for me when I was at IU, and there was this like, I think it was like a Project Jumpstart thing. I think it was like one of their music entrepreneurship lectures that I really wanted to go to. They had free coffee. They had free bagels from up the road at this really great bagel shop. And I was like, oh my gosh, I want to go to that. That sounds amazing. And I remember going, and I had my hand on the door knob and I was about to walk in. And I just started having this like wave of like heat, and I felt very anxious. And then I started crying, and I was like, wow, I'm having a panic attack right now. And I had to leave. I didn't go inside. And then after that event, every single time I went to walk into a room full of people, I started feeling very activated. And I didn't really know what to do about it. I saw a therapist for a while. I started taking antidepressants for a while. And one thing that I found really interesting about that period of time, because I had already gotten over my performance anxiety, but I found that every time I was on stage was the one time I felt calm, and the rest of my life felt anxious. It was almost as like, it was almost as if there was like this swap. And that took me a long time to work through. And I think yoga was a big part of that. Breathwork within this last year has been huge, hugely helpful for my state of anxiety. But that combination of just feeling like, oh my gosh, I can't even walk into a room full of people. This is insane. I have no reason to feel that way. On an intellectual level, I felt like it was absurd and ridiculous. But in those moments, it was like my whole body was just like feeling a certain way, and it felt very out of control. And unfortunately, I'm so sorry if my prior teacher is watching this, but the teacher I had at the time, I tried to tell them about what I was experiencing, and they completely just told me that, like, well, maybe you shouldn't play music, or, you know, they told me this anecdote about one of their colleagues who checked themselves into a mental health facility, and how nobody takes them seriously anymore because they're crazy. And that wasn't a very helpful conversation to have. But I think that it's important, and I think I'm bringing this up in this conversation because you really don't know what people are going through. You have no idea what other people are going through. Even if they tell you, even if you feel like, oh yeah, I understand they're telling me what they're going through, like, we don't know. And so part of holding a compassionate space for others is allowing that unknown to be okay, whatever that unknown is, to find acceptance with others, and to intentionally, as the person holding space, be as gentle and be as open to them being able to make their own decisions. Because the quickest way I think I have found to let other people know that it's safe to have your own experience and it's safe to do whatever it is that you feel called to do is to just give them options. So just give them options, whether that be the way that you design your studio space, whether that be the way that you frame things within a lesson, or how you value their experience just as much as the things that you're observing as an expert in your field, I think is very important. Because one thing that I've learned through this journey of becoming a yoga teacher especially, is that no matter how much I read, no matter how much I research, no matter how much I know about the human body, I will never know as much as your entire lived experience in your body. And so that's why it's so important to ask questions, to get feedback about how the other person is feeling, because how can you fully support another person in their journey if you're not also getting their input and valuing that as well? So I think that's all I wanted to share. I kind of just went off. And I moved through a lot of that information about nervous system stuff really fast. So if you're still confused, great. I encourage you to sit with that confusion and to do your own research about nervous system response. There's a great book. I don't have it here with me now, but there's a pocket guide for polyvagal theory. That's a great resource. There's also The Body Keeps the Score, which I personally have not been able to get past chapter 2 of because I found it too triggering for me. But it is a great resource, and somebody told me I have to read a particular chapter in it, so I'm waiting till a point in time where I feel well-regulated to dive into that chapter. But that is a great resource as well. I have a reading list. I have reading lists on my website, thealignedmusician.com. If you go to the top right, you'll see a resources button, and then there will be a list that comes down, and reading list is on there. And there are many, many other resources as well for learning about trauma response, for learning about nervous systems, and how to best support those that may have experienced trauma. And the crazy thing is, what I think is crazy when you think about it, is that the number of people that have had their nervous systems affected long-term by stress or by trauma is the majority of people. There are actually less people walking around in the world that are well-regulated, that have never experienced stress or trauma. That's just human experience. that there are always adversities, and those adversities may look different to other people. And yeah, we're all messed up, right? So just keeping that in mind as well, that the chances of you as a music educator working with a student that has experienced trauma is actually extremely high. And so the more that we can learn about how to hold space for those students and how to support them and work with them in a way that honors their experience and honors their own self-agency, I feel is extremely important. And if anyone has any further thoughts on it, please let me know. I just wanted to scroll up and make sure nobody had questions. Yeah, these breathing techniques, there are certain breathing techniques that can be very helpful before performances. And if you're, maybe I should make a video on that, on just breathing exercises for regulating the nervous system. But what I feel is the most important step before you do any breathwork exercise, even if it's just Nadi Shodhana, the one that I showed you earlier, is to just drop into your body and ask yourself how you feel. And if you don't know how you're feeling, one of the great indicators of that is the breath. If your breath is shallow and it feels like it's up here and maybe it's moving fast, faster breath, pace, tempo, that's an indication usually of sympathetic nervous system response. If you feel like your breaths are slower, maybe you're breathing a little bit deeper into your lungs. Maybe you're not even aware of your breath because it's moving so calmly and smoothly. That's a sign that you're in the parasympathetic nervous system, that down-regulated nervous system response. And there is no good or bad. It's just knowing in any given moment where you're at. So if you find yourself before a performance that you are someone that tends to be very upregulated in the nervous system, you feel anxious, you have that shallow, fast breathing up here that feels difficult to get deeper, you might have really cold hands. That's another common indicator of sympathetic nervous system response. You can get a hot glass of tea and just hold it in your hands. Warming up your hands is a great way to calm the nervous system. Taking an inhale through, if you're trying to activate the parasympathetic nervous system, calm your system down. Inhale through the nose and take an exhale out the nose that's twice as long as your inhale. So you might inhale for 3, exhale for 6. If you feel like you're, and I know this is a common thing, but when you're drinking that hot beverage or holding it, you want to make sure that you don't drink too much caffeine, because caffeine is designed to bring you into a higher state of sympathetic nervous system response. So if you find that you are already having deep breaths before a performance, maybe you're dissociating, maybe you're feeling foggy headed, maybe it's harder for you to concentrate before a performance. Maybe you feel like your hands are really warm, or you might feel like it's hard to move. You might be in more of a parasympathetic nervous system response, in which case it might be more helpful to take an inhale that's twice as long as your exhale. And you can do this through the nose or through the mouth. But taking an inhale, an example would be taking an inhale for 6, taking an exhale for 3. Drinking a cold beverage, drinking an iced coffee can help bring you out of that space of feeling a little more parasympathetic-y. And if you find that you're not at the, well, if you find that you're not at the extremes or at not at the extremes anymore after doing a few cycles of this breath and checking in with yourself, constantly asking yourself how that feels. Like, how do I feel now? How do I feel now? And when you get yourself to a place where you're more in what's called the window of tolerance, a place where you feel very comfortable, then, you can do a couple rounds of the alternate nostril breathing, and then from there, see how you feel. Because it's about nervous system regulation, right? And so there's all these tools that we can use to regulate the nervous system. And sometimes, even if we're using all the tools we have, it can still be very challenging too. I just want to acknowledge that as somebody that tends to be more sympathetic nervous system activation, and when it gets really bad, flipped into more dissociation and parasympathetic. I just know that about myself, and in the time that I've been tuned in to the physical sensations of my body and drawing awareness into nervous system response. Because I know about that about myself, I tend to gravitate towards more practices that bring me back into a state of calm. But even so, I might still feel anxious, and accepting that too as a possibility. And also knowing that for those that tend to be really anxious, going to a yin yoga practice or restorative practice and asking someone to just sit with their thoughts or sit with their feelings can also be very triggering. So just keeping that in mind as well, that these are tools, and that sometimes when these tools don't work and you're trying everything, it's a good time to, if you're not already, speaking with a therapist or maybe trying medication and seeing if that helps you to feel more regulated. Yeah, I hope that that makes sense, that these are things like yoga and breath work and somatic experiencing and all of these things that we do to try to bring our nervous system back into balance, whether we realize that's what we're doing or not. These are all tools to try to help us feel better. And then it's okay. There's nothing wrong with you for seeking out more help. And actually, seek out help in the beginning. I just know that that's not something that's always accessible for everyone because mental health care can be expensive. And I think that that right there is why so many people, so many musicians end up turning to things like drugs and alcohol. Why? Because they regulate the nervous system short term. So I think that as music educators, I think we hold a certain importance in that all of this, that we actually are very responsible to hold space in a way where our students can feel safe. And that may not feel like it's an urgent thing because we're all on Zoom, but actually giving people choice in our languaging and honoring someone's lived experience and asking them how they feel and incorporating that into what you're offering them is all super, super important. So please let me know if you have any questions. Like I said at the beginning, I'm not a therapist, not a psychologist, not a psychiatrist, not a, I'm not, I don't have that training or that background. But what I do have is a lot of trauma-informed training and research and knowledge in that area. And I think that the more people are trauma-informed, the more that we can avoid activating people, re-traumatizing people, or unnecessarily triggering people when that's not what we intend to do.
Thank you so much for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to hit subscribe, give us a rating, and follow on Instagram @thealignedmusician. Thank you so much, and take care.